when you see how weak, for instance, Germany has become, they aren't even defending their borders against the hijabs, against these immigrants, these so-called refugees, who really, I think, are not refugees, many of them. I think it's an orchestrated invasion by mobs coming, all these young men, that's not women and children for the most, of them are young men of military age, you know, who are mobbing out of the various parts of the Middle East and entering Germany and basically taking over Germany. And it's hard to believe it isn't some kind of coordinated conspiracy with the Islamists in the Middle East. The Arab states themselves are taking not a single one of these so-called refugees, but instead Saudi Arabia asks that its contribution to helping Germany will be to build 200 mosques in Germany. And it's like they're invading for a religious takeover of the West, right? Germany does not have the moral fortitude to defend itself and defend its borders against these people, okay? What would they do if Putin said, Germany, you know, I insist that you make the following demand, including allow me to have military observers on your territory, and that you reduce your defense budget even further, allow some occupation or something like that. If Putin basically pointed a gun at the head of Germany and to make it itself credible, detonated one nuclear weapon, maybe over the North Pole, you know, where it would do no harm, but as a demonstration to Germany of Russia's resolve that we will go to nuclear war, we will make an EMP attack on you if you do not relent, you know, I don't even think Germany would have to do the EMP attack. I mean, that Russia would have to do the EMP attack on Germany to get them to relent. I think if they just did a demonstration attack, you know, and lit one off, maybe just the threat, maybe just a verbal threat, if the Russian ambassador went into Angela Merkel and said, you aren't going to meet these demands. We won't have to make them public, so you won't be humiliated. But, you know, you can come up with some explanation as to why Russian armored divisions are now going to be stationed on German territory or something. We'll call it a peacekeeping exercise and that we're cooperating, okay? But this is going to happen, or we're going to invade you. I think the Germans would surrender. You know, I don't think they've got that if they're not willing to defend their civilization and their borders against this mob, this unarmed mob, you know, what would they do in the face of the Russian army, you know, armed with this advantage?
It would be a huge loss, you know, they're, and comparing Germany to Russia, they don't have the power and the force that Russia has.
And then Russians know this. You know, our army has been, well, you've heard the statistics on television all the time. You know, we've got fewer troops than we had before World War II. The Navy is the lowest that it's ever been since before World War I. You know, our ability to project power is not at all what it was. And besides, the old Cold War idea of the United States coming to the rescue by going over the Atlantic Ocean, I mean, that assumed that we would have weeks or months to do it, to move troops across. You know, in a modern threat from Russia, Russia has demonstrated that it can move fast the way the Germans could back in World War II and do a blitzkrieg. I mean, overnight, they practically had all kinds of troops in northern Syria, and it took our intelligence community by surprise. You know, we were surprised by that. One day they weren't there, the next day they were there. And Syria is a lot harder to go to than Germany and France. Those places are right next door to them. They're a lot harder to go to than Poland and the Baltic states. And so I'm afraid that, you know, I'm really concerned that, you know, that we could have a large-scale invasion or attack by Russia. Because I'm also concerned about what North Korea is going to do. Is North Korea going to take advantage of the next 2 years of this? North Korea has wanted to take over South Korea forever, or take revenge against Japan. You know, the North Koreans have hate Japan because of the Japanese occupation in World War II. And one of the ways Kim Jong-un could make himself look big to his general staff and his own people is by finally taking revenge, you know, for what happened to the Koreas in World War II by nuking Japan or something like that. Iran, you know, I think Iran already has the bomb. Will they use it in a terrorist attack, do an EMP attack? Anything could happen. Terrorists. Imagine your worst scenario. Anything is possible in the next 2 years, but all of these things are possibilities. China might invade Taiwan. Would it support North Korea in a war to reverse the outcome of the Korean War, you know, where China lost hundreds of thousands of people, you know, within living memory of a lot of them? You know, would they like to reverse that outcome in history? invade the Philippines, take over the Senkaku Islands at least. I mean, that's small potatoes compared to what they might think about doing. Demand that the United States recognize China has sovereignty over the South China Sea. I don't know how far. China, wants to see itself, wants to be acknowledged as a superpower, as another world superpower. What would they have to do militarily to make that a reality so that the whole world would now say, yeah, these guys are at least equal to or greater than the United States? Make a nuclear attack on us? I don't know. They might, but anything is possible. And people should not take comfort in the idea. So often I hear from colleagues, live in democracies. Our fatal flaw is that we tend to be strategic optimists. There's a always look on the bright side kind of an attitude that comes with free societies, because we want to be a happy, optimistic, hopeful people. And so we always try to look on the bright side so that things don't, and put the best interpretation on things. So we forget about Budapest agreements to Ukraine and say, well, it's too bad that's happening to Ukraine. That's how we tend to think, and one of the biggest rationalizations that a lot of your listeners may be thinking of is, well, surely Russia and China wouldn't do these things, and upset the world order and throw it into chaos because don't they want to prosper financially? The United States is still one of the most important economic systems in the world. And if they were to do things that would harm us, including destroy our society, wouldn't that hurt them? And come back and redound to them? What would happen to all that money that China has invested in the United States? How could Russia, milk the European cow dry, if they've destroyed Western Europe? We're too interdependent. We're too globally interdependent economically. And so these bad things won't happen. The fact of economic interdependence will rescue us. Well, this is a myth that's been around since before World War I. There was a guy called Norman Angell who wrote a book called The Grand Illusion in 1910, and 4 years before World War I. And he said, don't worry, all this talk about the possibility of another great war happening, a world war happening, and these naval arms races and stuff like that, this is never going to happen, because the economies of Europe are so interdependent that it would be a catastrophe for the European economy to have a world war. So it's never going to happen. It would be in nobody's financial interests. And the financial elites won't let it happen. Well, he was right that World War I was a catastrophe for the European economies, but it happened anyway. World War I happened anyway, because when you're dealing with nation states, especially states that are national security states, like Germany was, like the Austro-Hungarian Empire was, and like Russia was before World War I, the highest priority for these states was not their economies, and it was not the idea of accumulating wealth. It was security. Because when you look at their history, the many invasions, the many wars they had to fight, their idea of power was not power perceived in economic terms. The power they wanted, was to be feared and to be the dominant military power. That gave them their greatest security, not the economic power, And we in Western democracy think the ultimate power is the economic power. But guys like China, Russia, North Korea, Iran, they have different histories. They think differently. They see military power, military dominance is the biggest thing. And they'd be willing to sacrifice and make enormous financial sacrifices. They've already made enormous financial sacrifices just to build up their armies and navies and their nuclear missiles and be the national security states that they are today. They've made those enormous sacrifices. And since they have made these sacrifices within their own economies, why should we think that they would care about crippling our economies or give a second thought to that if it gave them what they wanted in terms of being the dominant powers, the most feared powers, the strongest militarily, and proving it to the whole world by defeating us? To them, that would be far more valuable than whatever economic benefits they might gain. Besides, it's also a myth in another respect. I think Russia and China and North Korea and Iran, if you read what they read and listen to what their elites say, they don't agree with the analysis that the economies of the free world, the United States and Europe, are necessary to them, to their own financial health. Quite the contrary. They see it as economics as a zero-sum game, and they think that we are prosperous at their expense. You know, they think, you know, that we have been imperialist powers that have, and that the, over the course of history, that our prosperity has been at the expense of the third world, has been stealing opportunities from them. They're even so paranoid, you know, that they think that our existence, you know, that we have engaged in underhanded schemes against them to undermine their economies. And so that on the contrary, you know, they don't see our economies and our system as some precious thing that needs to be protected because their own fate is tied to us economically. They see us as an active threat to their economic prosperity. And in a post-America world, in a world without America, a world without Canada, as they exist now, a world where we are subdued by them, that's going to be, then that's a much brighter world where they will dominate not just militarily but economically. And they think that they, without us out of the way, you know, they would be able to be much more prosperous than they are now economically. So I've gone on at length about that, but I just wanted to demolish and answer that one myth, because I know most people will always turn to that. They assume that, well, you know, we don't have to worry about a World War III or the worst case happening because we're going to be rescued by the fact that they need us. They need our economic prosperity. No, my friend, that's not how they think, and that isn't the reality of history.
One of the next questions I wanted to ask you was pertaining to whether World War III will happen.
What the Russian General Staff calls the correlation of forces has never been more favorable than it is now in any category of weapon or capability that you want to mention. And behind them, they have a lot of their old Cold War tanks, too, something like 50,000 of them in storage. 50,000, you know, that they can add to something like 20,000, you know, armored units they have. But I don't want to make this a meticulous ticking off in comparison of air forces and the rest.